You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast.
He walked 17.5% of the time. That gave him a triple slash of 259, 396, 618. He hit 18 home runs and stole two bases. Is this guy the next Babe Ruth?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Based on that very small statistical time.
I mean, you could just triple all his numbers, and we're looking at a guy, you know, who's going to hit, you know, almost 60 home runs next year. Right, Mike?
Right.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. I can't think of anything more exciting than talking the Phillies. And also, you know, being 17 degrees outside, I'm pretty excited about that. So I'm having fun.
Wow, 17 degrees. That sounds like that sucks. Because
Nashville, Tennessee, bro.
It's currently warm enough where I'm wearing t-shirt and shorts in Northern California right now.
Yeah, I hate you.
Thank God for global warming. As Mike mentioned, today we are going to continue our team previews and talk a little bit more interesting team than the first two teams that I've had the pleasure of talking about. We're talking about the Philadelphia Phillies today, who are an up-and-coming team and have some interesting fantasy pieces, but still not a very good team necessarily, though I think they may be a very popular sleeper pick for, you know, in real baseball this year.
Maybe.
As always, you can email me, the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can reach Mike on Twitter at Mike Warner, FWFB, and me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. And just a reminder, as you probably heard in the front, as long as I put the correct intro up there, please give us a rate and review. Really helps us out. And if it's of the 5-star variety, that'll get you entered to win some cool stuff they'll be giving away all preseason long and into the season. So continue to do that. Really helps us out. All right, let's go ahead and jump in and talk about the Philadelphia Phillies. And I think the one place you have to start when we talk about this team is with Rhys Hoskins, because Rhys Hoskins was absolutely dominant in his, you know, 50-game appearance at the Major League level. In 50 games, he had 212 plate appearances. He walked 17.5% of the time. That gave him a triple slash of 259, 396, 618. He hit 18 home runs and stole two bases. Mike, is this guy the next Babe Ruth?
Based on that very small statistical time.
I mean, you could just triple all his numbers, and we're looking at a guy, you know, who's going to hit, you know, almost 60 home runs next year. Right, Mike?
Right. I will say this. Like, in the Phillies minor league system, you get to hit in pretty favorable ballparks, and his home ballpark is also pretty favorable for home run power as well. So I think the one thing we can bank on with Hoskins is the fact that he's going to hit home runs. I like the profile a lot. I liked him as a minor leaguer. I obviously liked his small sample that he showed us last year. I feel like there might be a little bit of kind of Brett Lowry fever here, though, because you know, Brett Lowry, in his very small amount of time with the Blue Jays when he came up, was absolutely dynamite. And then he never really was able to. He's out of the league now after a few years. So not saying Hoskins is going to have the same thing happen. But I if you want Hoskins, you're going to have to pay a top 40 pick for him. There's still a good amount of projection left in this profile here. I love the fact that he hits a ton of fly balls. He obviously has great plate skills. I think that he's going to end up being a pretty good guy in terms of batting average. He's going to be, you know, sitting somewhere between 250 and 270, which is pretty standard for a nice power hitter. So, I mean, there's nothing really to say other than if you want to pay a top 40 pick for a guy like Hoskins, I have no problem with it. I probably won't end up with him in a ton of places because I'll have to bank on him hitting 35 plus bombs. And from a guy that's only 25 and just made his way into the major leagues, he is going to have to make some adjustments. And I'm not willing to kind of bank a top 40 pick on that. There's probably other guys that have done it before multiple times that I can probably rely on a little bit more. So I love Hoskins, probably somebody I'll draft in the next upcoming years, as opposed to this year.
Is it an added benefit for you that he has dual eligibility? He's going to be eligible in the outfield and at first base.
Yeah, I mean, it helps out for sure. I mean, you'll be able to kind of toggle him either place. But, I mean, again, a top 40 pick is really expensive for that. So unless he goes out, I mean, based on his pace last year, he would have hit somewhere, if he played a full season, somewhere between 50 and 60 home runs. That's not going to happen. I'd say like 35 to 40 is a comfortable projection for him. Which, again, is fine. It's just it's really tough for me to bank on that. Despite the positional flexibility, it's hard for me to bank on that. We've just seen it so many times. Guys come up, do really well, and then the following year have to adjust a ton. And that's exactly what he's going to have to do. He's had 170 at-bats in the major leagues. It's hard to really bank on that going into the next year. I mean, but I'm also the type of guy that the first year Mike Trout made his way into the major leagues, the first full season, I didn't necessarily think he was going to replicate that, and he did. So I'm always somebody that's skeptical before I believe.
Yeah, I'm skeptical too. I mean, not that I don't think he's going to be good, but I think there will be an adjustment period. If you look at the last 2 weeks of the season, and it's a really short and picked out sample size, so obviously, you know, I'm using it to make a point. But how many home runs do you think he hit in the last 2 weeks of the season?
He hit 7 in the month of September, so I'm assuming somewhere in the 4 range, 3.
He hit 0.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
And his triple slash was 135, 292, 192.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, is that a matter of, hey, he just hit a cold streak? Or is that a matter of, you know, people finally had seen him for a while, and now we're looking at a guy that maybe needs to make some readjustments because pitchers are figuring out him out a bit? It's probably a little bit of both, you know. And so I'm not going to project him for 40 home runs. I would probably project him for 30 to 35, and anything on top of that is gravy. People taking him above Edwin Encarnacion, I think, are a little bit crazy.
No, yeah, not in a one-year league. No.
Yeah, I mean... He definitely did in the RotoWire Dynasty, and I would have taken him had he made it back around to me in the third round. At the beginning of the third round, I would have taken him over the guy I ended up with, who was Miguel Sano, one day before the big news on him broke. And I was bummed I didn't get him, but I was really happy with my fifth-round selection of E5, and I feel like, oh, well, I didn't really lose a whole lot, especially because I don't necessarily care that much about the future. So, I think he's going to be a little bit overdrafted this year, and that's fine. And if he repeats, you know, if he goes on to hit 45 home runs, 50 home runs, maybe I'm going to feel a bit silly, but I'm not going to feel silly as long as my, you know, third, fourth round selections pan out the way they should. So I'm not too worried about it. Let's talk about the new first baseman, because Hoskins moves from first base into the outfield. That's Carlos Santana. It was kind of a weird signing from a baseball perspective, but from a fantasy perspective, what's your thoughts on Santana?
I've always liked Santana, despite the fact that he's never really panned out the way that we thought he could. And obviously moving positions and not being a catcher the last few years has kind of hindered his value. But I'm not really a fan for fantasy unless you're in an on-base percentage league. I think that's going to be just kind of a continuation of what we've seen the last few years, somewhere between 20 and 25 home runs, a good on-base percentage. The park probably will help him at least a few times in the home run category. So maybe you can uptick his bottom line in home runs to, you know, anywhere from like 25 to 27 or 28. But in general, you're going to see probably the same profile we've seen over the last few years. He's not going to strike out a ton. Very good plate skills. Somebody that, again, will probably use his new home ballpark to his advantage a bit. But he also doesn't hit a ton of fly balls. So not enough for us to project 30 plus home run power. But he's a pretty refined guy at this point. Somebody that we kind of know is you know, the same guy every year. So I think that he's going to end up being, last year his ADP was like 122. I can see it being relatively the same this year. But I don't think he'll hurt you as much as he did last year either, just because overall I think that he will get a couple more home runs and probably hit in the middle of the lineup as well, which will probably help him as opposed to being up top of the lineup like he was in Cleveland sometimes. So overall, I'm okay on him. I don't really find him to be somebody that's going to break out or something being with Philadelphia. But I think having a guy that's safe and that you know what you're going to get out of him is also a pretty good thing to buy in fantasy as well. So he's a pretty steady entity at this point.
And, you know, it goes without saying, if you know much about Carlos Santana, he gets a big boost in OBP league. So, like, if you're playing on base percentage formats, he's had, like, you know, 360 to 375 OBP in virtually every season. So,
and he always drops. He always drops in any league that you play in because he's not a flashy player.
No, he isn't. And like, so he's like the perfect corner guy. And I think Philadelphia will be a nice little landing spot for him. You know, I wonder, you know, can he handle, you know, playing every day and not getting like the days off at DH? But I mean, he's a guy he's played at least 154 games, or at least 152 games in each of the last five seasons, so that probably shouldn't be much of an issue. Let's move on. I'm just going to throw you out a bunch of names. You tell me if any of them are interesting to you in terms of fantasy. It's pretty much the rest of the infield. Cesar Hernandez playing second base. We've got J.P. Crawford playing shortstop. Jorge Alfaro playing catcher. Any of these three? Oh, and Mikel Franco playing third base. Any of these four guys interesting you from a fantasy perspective?
Well, I did just want to go back to Rhys Hoskins really fast on something I just found out. So when you look at the teams he faced, he's going to be facing Atlanta, Miami, the Mets, and Washington the most. If you take out the 8 home runs and 441 batting average he had against Miami, he didn't hit but 2 home runs against all the three other teams, and he hit less than 217 against all three other teams as well. And that's the main teams that he'll be facing this whole entire season. So that's just something to kind of bake into his projection as well, as like, obviously Washington, the Mets, and Atlanta found a way to pitch to him. And mind you, this is in a very small sample, so like, I'm not going to say that this is going to be something that stays, you know, continuing this year. But I do find it interesting that he did struggle against those teams, except for the fact that he just crushed Miami. He had 8 home runs and 34 at bats, you know, a 441 average. So I just want to mention that tidbit before we move on. But
I like that. That was a good tidbit.
Yeah. Anyways, Franco is always going to be somebody that's kind of close to my heart. I've loved him since he was a prospect. He obviously was disappointing last year. The main thing with me on him is that he just can't find a way to walk more. Maybe he never will be the type of guy that walks more, but he always maintains a pretty strong strikeout rate. He doesn't, you know, even in the, you know, full season last year, he didn't strike out more than, you know, 17% of the time, which is really solid for a power hitter. 25 and 24 home runs the last 2 years, not really something that you're excited about. The batting average also was kind of tanked last year, but I do think that there is a reason for rebound coming. His bad ball profile really hasn't changed. While it's not something that's more conducive to power or more power than he's shown, I think the batting average will bump back up this year based on his hard contact and based on his BABIP getting way worse last year at 240. So if we get a modest batting average bump next year, along with the same amount of power, maybe if we get a little bit lucky, a couple more home runs due to the lineup that he has around him, then I think he could end up being somewhere in the vicinity of a top 10 third baseman. And he's still only 25. So I still have a lot of faith in Mikel Franco, despite the fact that to this point he's been not a bust, but somebody that we had higher hopes for that hasn't really, done what we thought he would do. I will mention with Cesar Hernandez, I don't really find J.P. Crawford or Jorge Alfaro that interesting for this year. If I was going to pick between the two, I would say Alfaro just because the catcher position is so bad. But Cesar Hernandez never gets any type of credit for anything. He, you know, has stolen double-digit bases or 15 or more bases in 3 straight years. The Phillies are going to continue to probably hit him in the top of the lineup. He doesn't have a lot of power at all, but at the same time, in a league where we are looking for stolen bases anywhere, I think that somebody like Hernandez, who is going to hit for good batting average and steal some bases, is somebody that you can get for cheap and that nobody ever talks about. So I like Hernandez in that sense.
I completely agree with you on virtually all counts. I will, you know, maybe throw a little bit of cold water on your Franco talk, because I don't think there's any way Mikel Franco is a top 10 third baseman. I mean, even if his average rebounds,
there's two big names around him.
It's just too thick of a position. But I do like Franco from a perspective of I think people will just forget about him and just, you know, kind of take him off the draft boards. A lot of people got burnt by him, myself included. He did hit 24 home runs. And like you said, his BABIP is about 30 points lower than his career BABIP level. So you would expect that to come up a little bit, let the average rise. And you can do much worse if you're you've kind of punted the third base position, or you need a late corner guy or a reserve or bench guy. You could do worse than Mikel Franco, you know, because I do think he's going to rebound. He is only 25, so like he's coming into those peak power years too. So I mean, maybe the power could grow a little bit. Like you said, hits the ball hard. I don't think we're done with Mikel Franco by any stretch of the imagination. Top 10, no, but a valuable fantasy piece, I think he could be. And then Cesar Hernandez. I mean, like, it's not an amazing profile or anything by any stretch of the imagination, but he steals bases and he hits for average like that. And, you know, he could be leading off for a Phillies team that is kind of up and coming and has a more powerful lineup than maybe we have seen in a little while. So, I mean, he's a guy that could potentially hit you 5 to 10 home runs, steal you 15 to 20 bags, hit for he's hit 294 the last two seasons. So, you know, if he hits 290 and scores you 90 runs, that's a pretty valuable piece.
Yes. Yeah, and people don't draft those guys. Like, you never really want to draft the runs or the runs, batting average and stolen base guys. Maybe the stolen base guys, but you never think about drafting the guys that are going to score runs and hit for a good batting average, because you're obviously worried more about power and speed.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's one of the things, too. Like, if you miss out on a D. Gordon, if you miss out on a Billy Hamilton, or you just don't like those kind of players, Hernandez can be one of those guys that helps you accumulate stolen bases. So you're not necessarily, you know, drafting one huge guy, but you're drafting a guy that, you know, you're drafting four or five guys that maybe make up that production without taking huge hits to other counting categories. In the mock drafts that I did in October and November, he had an ADP of 242. Like, that's insanely low.
Yeah.
I think you're getting him at a pretty nice discount. You're getting and he can be a very productive player for you. So Cesar Hernandez is a guy I think is probably a little bit undervalued. Let's move on out in the outfield. We already talked about Rhys Hoskins, but we still have Odubel Herrera, Nick Williams, Aaron Altherr. What are your thoughts on the outfielders that we haven't talked about?
First off, with Nick Williams, I think people like him based on his prospect pedigree more than they should, at least in the small sample last year, which really was, you know, a good amount of time. You know, 313 at-bats is a good amount of sample that kind of gives us a good baseline of what he could be. He hit way too many ground balls. He had 50% ground ball rate and a 27% fly ball rate. He ended up getting 12 home runs in that time, but that's nowhere. He will hit 12 home runs in a full season next year if he keeps up that batted ball profile. So that's something to definitely look at as we move forward with Williams. Didn't really show any speed at all. And the fact that his plate skills were so bad really kind of sounds the alarms for me. 6% walk rate and 69% contact equals a 31% strikeout rate. That 288 batting average is going to go down, and it's going to go down in a big way, probably in the 240 range if I had to make a guess. And I just don't really like Williams like that. So I've never really been that enamored with him. And if he gets a full season of playing time, then I think it will be more a situation that the Phillies are trying to evaluate him even more in the major league level and see what they want to do with him. I think Aaron Altherr is still somebody that you can get relatively cheap. He ended up kind of having a couple of good months last year, and I think that's the player he is. He's somebody that can steal a few bases, hit for some power. His bad ball profile is definitely better than Nick Williams for sure, and I think that the power will play a little bit more. I don't think he's a 30 home run hitter, but 19 home runs and 370 at bats last year, I think, is something that we can probably see moving forward as well. And Odubel Herrera is somebody that I still really like. I think that he's going to end up being relatively the same as what he did last year, but really the main difference of what he did last year in 2016 when he was being drafted way higher is the fact they just didn't steal. So if he steals some more bases and is able to kind of get his walk rate back in check a bit, we're looking at pretty much the same guy that had 15 home runs, 25 steals, and a .286 batting average in 2016. So I still think at 26 years old, Odubel Herrera is the best guy of this group, and I'd probably buy him in, you know, a deeper format just as a fourth outfielder or so, or a third outfielder, just to see what happens. But I still have some faith in Odubel Herrera, and the other two, if I had to pick between the two, would be Aaron Altherr and then Nick Williams. So.
Yeah, right now Roster Resource has Williams and Altherr in like a strict platoon. I don't necessarily buy this. I think unless Nick Williams shows something a little bit more, then Williams may be the one on the bench and Altherr ends up, you know, having the starting role. Because I think, like you mentioned, I think he's the better player. And he's actually pretty – Altherr, even though he's right-handed, he's actually better against righties than he is against lefties. So, like, I mean, it's just there's no reason for me to see why Williams, other than being a couple years younger, would be starting on a day-to-day basis. So, Altherr is 27. It's not like he's old by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I mean, Williams hit .293 against righties last year, which I find – I don't know how he hit for the batting average he hit. Based on his batted ball profile and based on his contact rate, I mean, his BABIP was probably crazy. But, yeah, 380 BABIP. So there's no way that that's going to sustain itself. I'm just not a fan of Williams at all. So if there's somebody in, like, a deep dynasty league or something that still is buying him, then I would definitely try and trade him for pretty much any piece at this point because I have no faith. I think he's going to be out of the league in a few years.
Yeah, oh, my God. He had a 58.6% ground ball percentage against left-handed pitching. Oh, my God. That's so bad.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great.
Right. And I'm with you on Odubel. I think he, again, another guy that maybe will be a little bit undervalued coming off of what people will consider a down year. I don't necessarily think, it was. I mean, yeah, he didn't steal as many bases as you wanted, but I think those will rebound. Wish his walk rate would go back up to where it was in 2016, but we'll see if that's the case. I still think he's a guy that's going to give you pretty stable production, and he's going to play every day. So, I mean, we know that, especially with a contract. So let's go ahead and move on to the pitching staff. Aaron Nola is everybody's darling. Everybody wants a piece of Aaron Nola. It's going to drive the price up. He is not going to be cheap this year. You're going to be seeing in some drafts, him going as a top 10 starter. Where are you at on Aaron Nola?
I like Aaron Nola a lot. I still have there's just something in my mind that I'm still just not completely sold yet. I don't know what it is exactly, but
you're afraid his arm is going to fall off at any point?
There's that. I mean, when you're looking at his skills, ground ball rate, 50% or more, in the last two seasons. That's awesome. We love to see that. His strikeout rate, 9.8 or better the last two seasons. We love that. Swinging strike rate is 10% or more the last 2 years. We love seeing that. I hate guys that really rely on a breaking pitch to get guys out, and that's exactly what Nola does. And on top of that, he's somebody that we've already known. He's had arm issues in the past. And I'm not saying every pitcher won't have arm issues at some point, but he stranded runners. He kind of got back to a norm in the strand department, the left on base rate last year. And I think that kind of stabilized his, you know, god-awful season from the year before at 4.78 ERA in 2016. And, I think that when Nola is on the field, we're going to see somebody that has a 3.5 ERA or maybe better? Absolutely. And I think the strikeouts are going to be there. My worry is we've seen him throw 168 innings last year. And if I'm going over under 160 this year, I'm going under. And based on where he's going in drafts, I mean, I'm sure you have your mocks up, but I'm assuming he's going as at least a top 70 pick somewhere in there, maybe a top 80 pick. I don't know. But I just can't. He's going to end up being a starting pitcher two for you, and I would rather him be more of a starting pitcher three or four. So I'm probably going to be out on him, but that doesn't mean I'm out on the profile. He's just somebody that I have this block on in my mind based on the fact that I know how injury prone he is.
Yeah, he went at about pick 94.
It's better than I thought.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the hype machine is going to be going crazy. I mean, I don't know if you read what his write-up in the Baseball Forecaster, but it was pretty glowing. You're seeing already a ton of industry people starting to go a little bit crazy on him. Let's do a quick would you rather, because I love Aaron Nola, but I think what you said is right. I think the skills for me show a top 10 starting pitcher, but there's no way I can rank him in the top 10 comfortably, because I don't, if I'm putting, you know, the over-under at 165 innings, I'm going to take the under on that too. And that, therefore, you know, he's got capped value. Now, we're playing in a game today that very few guys are making it to 170 innings nowadays.
This is true.
So, like, you can't penalize him too much, but there's a real chance that, you know, we get what we saw in 2011, not from a result standpoint necessarily, but from an innings pitch, where only pitched 111 innings because of injury. Like, that is really concerning, especially if he's your number one or number two starter. So would you rather John Lester or Aaron Nola?
Nola.
It's Nola for me, too. Aaron Nola or James Paxton?
It's like the same guy. I would say I'm going Paxton.
I'm going Nola because Paxton's never pitched 140.
He hasn't either. Yes, I know. It's like, which one's worse? I don't know. I'd probably go Paxton, but like I'm sure Paxton's going ahead. He's probably going at least 15 to 20 spots ahead.
Paxton, I'm doing guys in his neighborhood. Yeah, that's so it's where the would you rather is coming from. But Paxton,
he was 74 on average. So like, if I'm given the choice between 74 for Paxton or 92 for Nola, then I probably would go 92 for Nola.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, I bet they're both going in the top 60 by draft day.
And you're probably right. I would probably, if they're right next to each other, I'm going Paxton. But if there is any type of gap, then I'm probably gonna go Nola.
Nola or Jose Quintana?
I'm going Quintana based on his just stable. He's not going to have as much of an upside, but if I'm at a deeper format, I'd go Quintana. Shallow format, I'd probably roll the dice and go Nola.
I'm with you there. Last one, Jacob Arrieta or Nola?
I'm like almost done with Arrieta. I'm going Nola. I'm done with Arrieta.
I'm gonna go Nola too, but I really don't feel good about it.
We're not making the case great to not draft Nola.
No, we're not. anybody else in this rotation interesting to you? Jared Eichhoff, Vincent Velasquez, Nick Pivetta, Ben Lively. I mean, they'll probably get an influx of minor leaguers. You know, they've got Jake Thompson, who may be coming up, Zach Eflin. But, I mean, nobody necessarily that I'm super, super intrigued by. So is there a rotation piece other than Nola that you're going to own?
That I'm going to own. I owned Eichhoff a good amount last year in deeper formats. He's definitely a little bit more of a fly ball guy and has a little bit different profile than somebody like Nola. He still relies heavily on a curveball, which I know everybody kind of sided last year, but he shows a good amount of those same skills, especially in the second half last year. He had a 10% swing strike rate and a 9.3 strikeout rate. So like, that's something that we really like. The whip is still going to be a little bit of an issue for him, and he still gives up a good amount of home runs as well. But I think that there is something there. So Eichhoff I like in a sense. I don't think that he's going to be somebody I draft on every team or whatever, but I do like him. Lively had a couple of starts last year that I was a little bit intrigued by. For the most part, I wasn't, you know, really enamored with what he did, but I think that there is a possibility that he could be deep league kind of waiver wire type fodder where you could use him in a pinch at times or whatever. With Velasquez, I don't know if he's ever going to be healthy or if he's ever going to be able to. He's going to have to be a late inning reliever, and I think that that's why the Astros traded him in the first place. They probably knew that they started him a little bit, that some other team would want to get him as a starter, and then once they started to stretch him out, he would end up having some injury issues and not being able to remain durable. And on top of all that, we're seeing kind of some skills erosion as well. So we saw a stark drop in his swing strike rate last year in the minimal time that he pitched, 72 innings. We also saw an ERA where the expected ERA was 4.65, just a little bit less than the 5.13 he actually had. The control is terrible, and maybe that kind of coincides with his injury issues or whatever. But, Velasquez is still somebody that I think that especially in like keeper leagues or whatever, you can probably buy for the real cheap in the hopes that he does get converted to a reliever spot at some point, because, he, as far as stuff goes, he has some great stuff. And, you know, the Phillies have a bullpen where, yes, they do have Hector Neris. They just signed Tommy Hunter. They have Pat Neshek, but they could definitely use a guy like Velasquez to come in there. And while their minor league system doesn't have great, arms in their rotations at all. I still think that they could use somebody like Velasquez, take him out of the rotation and put him in the bullpen. So I think Velasquez probably has the highest upside long-term for a bullpen spot. But as far as this year, I think Eichhoff and maybe a little bit of Ben Lively is all you're going to be looking at from the rotation.
Yeah, I'm man, there's part of me that I love what we've seen in short spurts from Velasquez, but I do. I think he needs to be a reliever. And I think he could be a really, really good closer.
Yes.
Or setup man. But until he gets moved to the bullpen, I'm not touching him. So Eichhoff, there are moments, again, where I see really brilliant outings or really brilliant stretches during outings. And then just he leaves one up and it gets clobbered or, you know, I just can't do it again.
I mean, it was a real torture last year. Like, I would put him in for a week in my weekly leagues and he would just kill me. And then I would take him out and he'd have like a two start stretch where he would just give up one run and 12 innings with 15 strikeouts. I'm like, you dick. Then I'd have to bench him again. And it would go back and forth. It was terrible.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, like, he got a little unlucky in certain regards, but I think a fair amount he earned. So, like, it's hard for me to, like, point to anything, like, really, really strong. Like, he had a really, really strong month at one point. I'm trying to remember when it was. It might have been July, if I go back and look at his splits.
Yeah, it was July.
Like, a really, really strong month. And I was, oh, shit, he's figured it out, you know, the first couple months were rough, but now, and then he just got just tortured, like, after that, and then went on the DL for the rest of the season late in August. So, I'm probably not buying. Like, I don't understand why, like, the Phillies have been rumored to be in on, some players, and I don't know why they haven't gone after one of these big free agent pitchers that are still out there. Maybe
their rotation isn't done. They're definitely going to be getting a couple guys, even if it's like Chris Tillman's of the world.
Yeah,
like, they're
no,
going to be
like,
some
why
guys.
Go out? Like, this is a team that's got an up and coming offense that doesn't have a ton necessarily in terms of
minors.
The minors, at least high up minors in terms of pitching. Why not go and get a Yu Darvish? Why not go get a Jacob Arrieta? Like, why not spend, like, your offense is pretty much set. Like, go fill out your team and compete now.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I don't know. I think that they feel the offense isn't ready to be as competitive as they would need to be to, you know, go against the Dodgers or the Cubs or anybody like that. So, I mean, they need to make a lot of strides pitching-wise. If Aaron Nola is your ace, then you're going to be looking at problems. Like, they need a couple of pieces for sure. And
like,
Yu Darvish would be one of them.
That
would be awesome.
You add, like, Yu Darvish and then go add, go get Garrett Cole. Like, trade some of those minor league pieces that are going to be blocked here, you know, because they've got a pretty decent, you know, offense. You know, I'll talk more about their minor league system with Matt, but go trade a Dylan Cousins and, you know,
Roman Quinn or whatever.
Yeah, Roman Quinn or something like that for Garrett Cole. Like, you know, and then add, you know, a Yu Darvish or a Jacob Arrieta. And now you've got a starting three of Aaron Nola, Darvish, and Garrett Cole.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And their bullpen is good, especially if they move Velasquez down there. I think that bullpen could be really solid. So,
that would give you the depth in the rotation to do that, to move Velasquez. Go, listen, we're gonna start you off in the bullpen. You'll probably be pitching, you know, sixth, seventh inning for a little while, but you show us you're healthy. You show us some decent control coming out of the pen, and you'll be closing before the end of the year. You know, now you've got a bullpen of Hector Neris, Tommy Hunter, Pat Neshek, Vincent Velasquez. That's a pretty nice back end of your bullpen with three really good starters. You figure out the other two starters, you know, whether it's Pivetta, Lively, or Thompson or something like that. You've got a team that can compete in a division that is pretty god-awful outside of the Nationals.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Atlanta's probably going to take a step up this year, but they're not going to compete for anything serious. And the Mets have a whole world of problems going on with them. So
Miami's taking a huge step back. So, I mean,
Miami's not even a major league team at this point. They're more or less
exaggerated
minor league team.
They're still a major league team, but like it's getting close. They may not.
The Phillies are in talks for Yelich too. So I mean, we could be completely on the opposite end here whenever this comes out. So
exactly. So.
Stay tuned.
All right, that's going to wrap us up. Mike, why don't you tell people where you reach, what you're working on?
Yeah, reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. We got the draft guide coming out this year, which is going to be awesome. And I'm going to continue writing for Baseball HQ. So check it all out. Just go to Twitter and, you know, find out.
Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can read all my work on Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Fangraphs, hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, doing some stuff with Fantrax for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. I feel like I'm missing some place, but
you probably are because you're on pretty much everything in some way.
Yeah. I'm sure by the time this gets released, I'll be working for like three or four more different outlets too. So, just trying to make those dollars. But that's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Mike and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.